The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
You know, foreign policy-wise, I don't think there's been a president in a generation who's even come close. I've never seen a president who's accomplished so much, who's achieved so much peace, who's been able to advance America's economic interests through his foreign policy. And I really think it's a very unique perspective. But I actually think, even though the Democrats won't ever admit it, that administrations for the next 40 or 50 years are going to be guided by the Trump doctrine in the same way people were guided by the Monroe Doctrine 200 years ago.
I thought I have a very good relationship with President Putin. I thought that was going to be my easier, an easier one.
Yeah.
Because I saw some of the wars were going, in one case, 32 years, in one case, 36 years. You know, I got them settled in like 2 days. I'm very proud of that. I just had one where today, I think I settled one today, another one. But we just about exhausted the supply of wars. You know, I didn't know there were so many wars.
However, I have something in my heart that I think is incredibly important for our country, and that is to end the toxic fighting in politics. And this has been going on for years, and it has divided our country, split up friends and families, neighbors, and it's not solving our problems. The most hurtful thing he said, which is absolutely untrue, is he called me a traitor, and that is so extremely wrong. And those are the types of words used that can radicalize people against me and put my life in danger.
Her life could be at danger because of the rhetoric.
Her life is in danger. Who's that?
Marjorie Taylor Greene.
I don't think her life is in danger. I don't think anybody cares about her.
Tell you what, six months in, Steve, and here we are turning back on the campaign promises, and we bombed Iran on behalf of Israel. Yes, it was on behalf of Israel. We're entering a nuclear war, the World War III.
Mr. President, Tucker Carlson recently had a friendly interview with anti-Semite Nick Fuentes. Tucker Carlson. What role do you think Tucker Carlson should play in the Republican Party and the conservative movement going forward?
Well, I found him to be good. I mean, he said good things about me over the years. I think he's good. We've had some good interviews. I did an interview with him. We had 300 million hits. You know that. Look, I can't tell him. Will you let me finish my thing? You are the worst. You're with Bloomberg, right? You are the worst. I don't know why they even have you. We've had some great interviews with Tucker Carlson, but you can't tell him who to interview. I mean, if he wants to interview Nick Fuentes, I don't know much about him, but if he wants to do it, get the word out. Let him, you know, people have to decide. Ultimately, people have to decide.
Another weekend news cycle. There's always something for everyone, isn't there? All the talk about success and peace and what was the statement? We've just about exhausted the supply of wars. There are no more wars to finish. And yet, well, listen to them go back and forth at each other. I mean, the spirit of war is everywhere. You see it politically, you see it according to nations, families, and of course, it's all spoken of in Bible prophecy. And we'll look at some of those verses on today's show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. We're off and running on another week of broadcasting. You can get to the live video stream of the Trumpet Daily at thetrumpet.com, the website, or go to our Rumble channel, rumble.com/Trumpet Daily. So for the past several days, I've been studying into what the Bible describes as the heart of man or the mind of man. And when you compare it with what man thinks about the human heart and how much trust we have in, you know, the peace process or a political movement or party, how much trust we have in the Jews or how much we don't trust the Jews. The spirit of murder, hatred. Tucker can sit down with anyone he wants to because he said some good things about me. How's that for bottom line reasoning? There was a time when Marjorie Taylor Greene said a lot of good things about Donald Trump. In fact, she was one of his most ardent supporters. But what happened? I mean, there's the breakup in the MAGA movement over the Jews, you know, the dirty Jews. And now they're divided over the Epstein files and, you know, foreign wars and all these peace efforts when there's still a lot of problems at home. There's a lot of division in MAGA. I mean, and it's they're airing their dirty laundry out in front of everybody. And as President Trump often says, the Democrats, even though there's deep divisions there as well, they tend to conceal it better. But here are the MAGA people fighting one another. And we're, what, not even a year away now from the midterm elections. I mean, the return of Jeroboam, even though it was prophesied, and we certainly talked about it nonstop on this show, but at the same time we said, don't get swept up into this false sense of security. Don't put your trust in a man. Don't put your trust in a political movement. And you see quite a few people already disillusioned. It makes you think about all those promises that the dear leader made back in 2008. And then he came in and right away we learned that, oh, actually he's going to increase or intensify racial tensions and strife and division. He certainly did. And President Trump's certainly done some positive things with the economy. Some would say not near enough or not fast enough with border security. But boy, we weren't expecting the peace kick. I mean, to be talking about exhausting the supply of wars. And I didn't get the Nobel Peace Prize. Who would have known coming in just how obsessed this administration would be with a piece of paper, with sitting down with terrorists in the White House or in Cairo or wherever, Qatar, Turkey, and on it goes. The spirit of hatred, it is everywhere. Matthew 13 and verse 15. You know, I was saying in Life and Teachings this morning, just before I get to this verse, you know, here is the Son of God, Jesus Christ, the Messiah, the Anointed, and he's coming, and practically everything he did was the fulfillment of a prophecy in the Old Testament. The time, the place, even what he would do and what he would fulfill. There's a passage where he's teaching in the synagogue on the Sabbath, by the way. He's teaching out of the book of Isaiah. He closes the book. He tells the people they're listening, and they were fastened on him, by the way. He tells them, this day is this prophecy fulfilled. What Isaiah the prophet had written some 700-800 years earlier. He was fulfilling prophecy in front of these masses of people, and yet he told the people, well, you turned out because of the miracles. You just want to be a spectator. Or you turn, in the case of John 6, you turned out because you wanted a free meal. They didn't want the true doctrines of God. They didn't want repentance for sure. And so in the end, I mean, he spent the better part of his 3.5-year ministry with just 12 students, 12. Now, he certainly addressed the masses as well, and sometimes they chased after him. But he explained the meaning of the truth that he preached to just 12 students. For the most part, you get to Acts 1, there's 120. You think of all the preachers, the teachers in the history of human civilization, which one should have been by far the most popular, best received master of them all? You would think it would be the Son of God, right? In fact, they rejected him. He came as a light and they preferred darkness. That's what the scriptures say. Look at this one here in Matthew 13. Verse 15 says, "For this people's heart is waxed gross, and their ears are dull of hearing, and their eyes they have closed, lest at any time they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears and should understand with their heart and should be converted, and I should heal them." That's one of many verses, by the way, that talk about man's heart and how it needs to be healed. There's a verse in Philippians that talks about the mind of Christ that we have to let in, because the human mind won't cut it. The human mind is deceived. The human mind is hostile to God and His law. Romans 8 and verse 7. As I say, when you look into the Bible and you see what it has to say about the human heart or mind, it's not very good. Matthew 15 and verse 19, Jesus said this, "For out of the heart proceeds evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, blasphemies." I mean, you heard MTG there say, look, there's just been so much violent and angry rhetoric, and we've got to tone it down. And I mean, she's in MAGA, or was, and now there's a division there. You know all about the division between Republicans and Democrats. They're digging in their heels. It's the spirit of this world. Genesis 6 and verse 5, this was God's assessment of human hearts just before the flood of Noah's day. He said, "And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually." Every single imagination, his heart was set on evil continually at all times. The Amplified Version says, "Every imagination and intention of all human thinking was only evil continually." Not one good thought. Total mental depravity. And it filled the earth. A couple chapters later, Genesis 8, verse 21, "For the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth." From his youth. That's where it all starts. Ephesians 2 and verse 2 tells us how it happens. It's not like God created us with an evil heart, but it is corrupted from the earliest days of our youth because of Satan's broadcast. He's relentless. He's vicious. He's filled with hate. He's the father of lies. He's the father of murder. He's behind the spirit of hatred and division. And the reason this passage before the flood is so important is because of what Jesus said in Luke 17. He said it would be just like the days of Noah in the last days, where man's heart, where every imagination and intention in all human thinking is on evil continually. President Trump came back because God brought him back. God intervened to save his life. And we're finding all these new revelations out about Thomas Crooks, you know, the one that everyone forgot about as soon as it was July 14th last year. And yeah, he's a radical leftist, but Chris Wray scrubbed that from the record, the former FBI director. And it's only now coming out, thanks to some internet investigators, basically, finding his social media footprint and just all the evil thoughts that he harbored, that he put on social media, and that evidently the FBI never, I mean, they couldn't quite track it, or it didn't get their attention. There were no red flags. And then when he carried out his evil deed, you have the men in suits at the FBI, at the DOJ, that just get up even before Congress and lie, as I discussed on the program Friday. They just lie about it. I mean, where does that come from? That motivation, that intention, that evil. Well, it was just like that, or this, in the days before the flood. And Jesus said it's coming again. Ted Cruz recently, I didn't have time to play this Friday, but he was talking about just the division in MAGA over the Jews and how there's a lot of conservatives now that hate the Jews. They hate Israel. They hate the United States having anything to do with Israel. This was Cruz on JNS, clip 16.
You know, if you step back for a minute, it was about 10 years ago that anti-Semitism began rising in the Democrat Party. And the Democrat leadership essentially did nothing about it. They looked the other way. They thought the problem would solve itself. And it has all but destroyed the Democrat Party. As we talked about before, the pro-Hamas caucus drives the agenda, and the remaining Democrats, many of my colleagues in the Senate, are terrified of crossing them. But we are seeing the same poison rising on the right. And in the last 6 months, I've seen more anti-Semitism on the right than at any point in my life. We see multiple prominent voices on the right going online and defending Hitler. I mean, it almost should be a joke. And what I worry about, look, we're so polarized right now. We're so tribalized that there's very much a team color sense. And I worry about 18, 19, 20-year-olds who are hearing the message, oh, okay, our team, we hate Israel. That's really dangerous, and it is spreading. And listen, I've resolved, I'm going to do everything I can to fight it. I am not going to let the Republican Party be destroyed by this poison that has already destroyed the Democrat Party. And I'm not going to let the country be destroyed, because if we wake up 5 years from now, and both parties are viciously anti-Israel, viciously anti-Semitic. By the way, when you are anti-Israel, you know what comes very soon thereafter? Being anti-American.
So there's Ted Cruz standing up for Israel, saying there's a lot of people on the right now that hate Israel, they hate the Jews, that actually defend Hitler, like Fuentes. The one that Tucker sat down with and had a nice, you know, cordial discussion with. And then President Trump, for his part, as you heard in the cold open, he's asked about it. And he says, you can't tell Tucker who he can interview. And, well, he's right. You can't tell him who he can interview. He said, look, if he wants to interview Fuentes, I don't know much about him, but if he wants to get the word out, well, what word is he getting out? That Fuentes is right, or he's wrong, or somewhere in between, or just, well, we got to talk to him because that's how we solve problems. We just talk. He says, let Tucker interview who he wants. You know, people have to decide. We've got to hear both sides of the argument. People are really opening themselves up to a lot of heavy, heavy demonic influence. This is exactly the way the devil wants it. Because he presents himself as an angel of light. If you read 2 Corinthians 11, that's what you'll see. That's what you'll read. And Paul says, so it should be no strange thing that the devil's ministers also present themselves as angels of light. Well, you can sit down with them. They may defend Hitler on one podcast, but then you can sit down with them over here and you can see a perfect angel. Just the way the devil wants it. We talked on Friday about the media how that they're complicit in the attack on America. You see that all through our book, America Under Attack. And my father made this statement. I know I gave it to you on Friday, but he said the mainstream media have been overcome by the devil. I mean, that's a pretty big statement right there. They've been overcome by the devil. And he said, look at how leftists are now using their power in the media, technology companies, and social media to silence anyone who disagrees with them. Well, now some of that's being reversed because Donald Trump's back in power. And yet now look at what's emerging on the right. Look at the division within MAGA. God's trying to show us that there is no hope in man. That's the message of Jeremiah 17. And yet look at how much hope we put in man-made institutions. Look at how much hope we put in human diplomacy, talking, dialogue with the devil. Melanie Phillips, she wrote that piece this past summer, negotiating with the devil or something to that effect. That's not going to work out well in the end. The underlying premise of all this that you're seeing, even though they're fighting and they're bickering out in the open, out in the public's view, right on television, really the underlying premise of it all is that this world is a pretty good place. And hey, we've all got our different views. What did President Trump say? Let the people decide. I mean, that's basically Jeremiah 21 and verse 25. Sorry, Judges. Judges 21, 25. Just let every man decide for himself. Well, that's what we're doing. And so that's why you see so much fighting. No amount of, hey, we've accomplished this, 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 and this will cover for a cold, hard, realistic view of this present evil world. Okay, so it's not the most popular message there is. But look, Jesus came. Jesus came to this earth, God in the flesh, the anointed of God. And I just read to you what he said about the human heart. And they hated him because of that. They hated Christ. I mean, we know about what happened at the end with the crucifixion and the scourging, the beating, the suffering. They were about to throw him off a cliff outside of Nazareth at the very start of the ministry, because he came in and he upbraided the people. And he said, look, this is my hometown. And yet a prophet has no honor in his own town. It says that in all the Gospels. They didn't honor him. They didn't respect him. They didn't look to him. For whatever reason, they didn't like his message. They were jealous. They found fault. It's unbelievable. This was the human heart 2,000 years ago in the presence of God. Even the ones that saw Jesus grow up in Nazareth, they wanted to kill him. And he had to escape away. It wasn't time, but they eventually got around to it. They killed him 3.5 years later. What does this world, I mean, the world today, it's an outgrowth of what was there 2,000 years ago. What is wrong with this world? Answer, the human heart. That's what's wrong. Listen to Herbert Armstrong. This is from a sermon he gave back in 1981, clip 14.
Now the whole world has been cut off from God and from the knowledge to solve man's problems or to deal with one another. He's cut off from God and he can't even deal with his neighbor. That is the kind of world you've been born in. And people think this is God's world. And people think this is a pretty good world. Oh, they don't know how rotten it is. Man has had great progress materialistically. But he's had nothing but retrogression when it comes with dealing with man and no connection with God. Even after Christ came. Now, why did all this thing happen? Man cannot deal with people. He's out of contact with or help from the Creator, which he needed. Now, man has developed the hydrogen bomb. Man has developed the engines of destruction that can become the Frankenstein monster to destroy man.
So who's right here? Some of the ones you've seen in the clips I've played, or is this servant of God right? Is his assessment of this world correct? He said there, notice, that even after Christ came, man had no relationship with God, couldn't get along with fellow man, and even when God in the flesh came, they still didn't embrace him. They still rejected and despised him. They dishonored him. They persecuted him. They chased him. That's what mankind thinks of God. And that's because of the human heart. I mean, when Jeremiah 17:9 says it's deceitful above all things and desperately wicked, I think there's another translation that says dangerously sick. I mean, we need healing. We need healing. Philippians 2 and verse 5 says, let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. Let this mind be in you. We need another mind if we're going to solve the problems of this rotten world. In fact, we need a new world. And that's what God is creating in his church. And the Bible refers to his church as the little flock. It's just a small grouping carrying out his work, his plan, because they're people that have received the message from God, the doctrines of God, and have repented of their sins, turned to God. All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, Romans 3. We have to claim that sacrifice. We have to be willing to confess our sins, to see the evil of the human heart, to see how dark it is, to see what proceeds out of it, and to be willing to repent and change so that God can give us his power and we can go forward with Christ. Verse 1 in the Moffat, it says, so by all the stimulus of Christ, by every incentive of love, by all your participation in the Spirit, by all your affectionate tenderness, Paul says, I pray you to give me the utter joy of knowing you are living in harmony with the same feelings of love and with one heart and soul. I mean, this world is not living in harmony. Americans are not living in harmony. Republicans are not living in harmony. Republicans and Democrats, certainly not living in harmony. Why? Well, because there's another mind that we need to bring people together. We need the mind of Christ in order to get along with fellow man. As Herbert Armstrong so often said, the problems of this world are spiritual in nature. We need this mind. We need the Spirit of God. That's what's missing. It's so obvious that this world is in its very last days and that the human heart, the evil of the human heart, it just whacks worse and worse and worse. Listen to this from another program of Mr. Armstrong's in 1984, clip 15.
Man without God is all mixed up. He cannot solve his problems. He can think of material things. He can get along with matter. But when it comes to getting along with other minds, that's where the trouble comes. One mind does not get along with other minds, and so we have troubles in the world. And that is the source and the foundation of all of our troubles in this world. That's why the Apostle Paul wrote, let this mind be in you which was in Christ Jesus. But Adam rejected that mind. He rejected the mind of God. He rejected reliance on God, said he would rely on himself. And mankind has been doing that ever since. Nations have trouble. Individuals have troubles. They can't solve their troubles or their evils. So God closed up the tree of life. And he closed it until the second Adam, Jesus Christ, would come.
That's a great clip right there. We'll have to look into the background of that, who he's addressing in that small audience. It's from 1984. He's explaining why we can't solve our troubles, why they're multiplying. There's this article, Sasha Stone, writing about Barack Obama and the civil war that he started. It's not yet a hot war, but just all the seeds of division and strife that he planted. It says, and so we began fighting a civil war, not at Gettysburg or Shiloh, but on Facebook, Twitter, X, YouTube, TikTok. But only one side is cutting off friends and family. Only one side has no plan for the rest of America on the outside. Only one side seems prepared to become violent to preserve their utopia. I mean, think about this. Just by way of comparison, on the one hand, you have people just cutting off family. I don't, you're a dirty Republican or a Jew? I'm not going to have anything to do with you. I want to blot you out. And then you've got this other extreme movement that says, hey, you're all for exterminating Jews? Well, hey, let's come and talk about it. Let's talk about your views. I mean, nobody can say who or who should not go on a podcast. The more we talk, the more we solve problems. That's delusional, that kind of thinking. It says here, I thought November of 2024 was like the burning of Atlanta. Not quite the end of the war, but almost. Now, after Charlie Kirk's assassination and the fracturing of the right, I'm not so sure. We thought, well, as soon as Jeroboam comes back, I mean, the Civil War's over. We finally overturned Obama's fundamental transformation. And, well, it did prevent that complete transformation from happening. But are we reversing everything that was wrong with America? Is it a 180 degree turn? It says here, what I do know is that so much of what defines our civil war, so much of what explains the left's mass psychosis took root in 2008. 2008 was a crisis that sparked the fourth turning. According to Neil Howe, who co-wrote the book with William Strauss, it says, it wasn't just the election of the first black president or the launch of the iPhone, the rise of social media, or the $800 billion bailout of Wall Street that birthed two populist movements on the left with Occupy and on the right with the Tea Party. It was also the year an idea contagion began to spread. I mean, we're not even looking back more than what, 20 years? And you see the rise of social media, just the technology. Look at how much evil spreads just because of that. But then you've got the Dear Leader. Everything that's happened since, the attack on Trump. In April of 2008, Obama was recorded writing off half the country as people who were bitter and clinging to guns and religion. They were bitter clingers. You remember this, some of you. It says, but it was accusations of racism and Islamophobia that would become Obama's most powerful weapon to win. It is the kryptonite of the ruling class and what has divided this country for 10 years. Back in 2008, Obama was accused of being a Muslim socialist, not born in America, who palled around with terrorists. Now, one of the new leaders of the Democratic Party is a Muslim socialist, not born in America, who pals around with terrorists. There you go. No, Obama was an angel. Obama was an angel of light. He was not a Muslim terrorist or a Muslim terrorist sympathizer, nothing like that. And now look at where we are today with Mamdani. Heading up the city of New York, New York's new mayor. and more Democrats saying, hey, the time for civility, as if we're civil right now, the time for civility is over. Listen to this from Fox News, clip 6.
More liberal voices are demanding Democrats ditch civility altogether. Take a listen to comedian Samantha Bee and Hunter Biden.
So sometimes you do just need to stand up and scream. I think civility is pretty overrated. I certainly am not in any way advocating that we edge toward political violence.
What I haven't seen is people going, we need to look at extremism in general and tone down the temperature.
Yeah, no, they need to turn the temperature up. I say that we need to turn the temperature up. I am absolutely 100% not saying that it needs to be violence.
Turn up the temperature. Now, don't take that to mean violence. We just had two assassination attempts on the Republican frontrunner last summer. And they quiet down for, 2 seconds? And then here they are. I think civility's overrated. I think we got to fight. I mean, not literally, but, you know, fight. J.D. Vance commented on the radical left. And it makes you think of the quote from Herbert Armstrong, and he was right about just tear down the entire system. This is clip 7.
But I think, Sean, there are so many far-left people who run the Democratic Party in Washington, D.C., they just want to burn it down. They don't care if the troops don't get paid. They don't care if you cause billions of dollars of lost productivity. They don't care if you shut down the airline industry, which they were very close to doing. They just want to get Trump. And they don't care if they have to burn the entire country down in order to get Trump. That's what they want to do.
As I told my team this morning, I mean, we're not that far away from everything just completely unraveling. In fact, you go back to last summer. What happens to this country if President Trump didn't tilt his head? What happens if he's taken out on July 13th, 2024? Now, God intervened. He did. God brought him back. God saved his life. But look at where we are today. 8, 9, 10 months into the new administration, President Trump's second term. Miranda Devine has this long article about the shooter last summer, Thomas Crooks. There's something very wrong with the official story and invites conspiracy theories. What is going on? I mean, somebody was murdered that day. They were trying to shoot at Donald Trump. He tilted his head. Someone else got shot in the head and died. And yet it was just kind of brushed aside. Chris Wray just dismissed it. He even dismissed the fact that Donald Trump was shot in the ear. Well, I mean, we don't know for sure. These are the ones that investigate the crimes. And they're committing crimes as they do it. So how do you solve this kind of evil? And why does this happen? Well, because of the heart of man. The FBI director, Chris Wray, told Congress after July 13 that the attack, that the Bureau had found nothing in Crooks' online history that pointed to a motive or political ideology. Nothing. No, not politically motivated at all. That was the FBI director at that time, Chris Wray. That's his testimony. That's what he told Congress. A week later, Wray's deputy, Paul Abate, told Congress that comments posted on one of Crooks' social media accounts appear to reflect anti-Semitic and anti-immigration themes. So they knew, they have the social media footprint. They have it. I see a Celtic Throne ad on that New York Post article. There you go. You've got Miranda Devine. And then, oh, they got rid of it already. Sorry, I jinxed it. So anyway, he gets on, the deputy guy. He goes before Congress and he says, you know, it's if anything, he was kind of a right winger. And then that's all we know. And we're not going to talk about him anymore. That was their story and they stuck with it. Devine says, thanks to an enterprising source who uncovered Crooks's hidden digital, an enterprising source has to figure this out because Chris Ray's job is to cover it up. Thanks to an enterprising source who uncovered Crooks's hidden digital footprint, we can see that Abate misled Congress. That's the deputy FBI director. Yeah, he misled Congress, but that's okay. That's just what they do. It's just what they do. We can see that Abate misled Congress by omission because he left out an entire section of Crooks' online interactions from January to August 2020 when he did an ideological backflip and went from rabidly pro-Trump to rabidly anti-Trump and then went dark, never seeming to post again. This is the part that Chris Ray left out, you see. The online interactions from when Crooks was ages 15 to 17 give us a better understanding of his evolution into an assassin and his ideology. It says the danger Crooks posed was visible for years in public online space. Not at the FBI. They couldn't see it. No, they didn't see it coming. They didn't know who he was. He was just some guy online talking about assassinations and political violence. I mean, you hear what Hunter and the comedian gal say, and then these guys just take it a step further. Yeah, get the rifle, get the scope. It says the source found reams of information that shows Crooks was not simply some unknowable lone actor. He left a digital trail of violent threats, extremist ideology, and admiration for mass violence. Should I repeat that? He left a digital trail of violent threats, extremist ideology, and admiration for mass violence. But, you know, if it's aimed at Republicans, especially if it's at Trump, well, just let him talk. Let him talk. There's no cause for concern. It says none of this online activity was referenced in the final congressional report released in December 2024. That would be 11 months ago. The final report. It's over. The investigation is done. If anything, he was anti-immigration, so he's kind of right-leaning. And they just blot out all of the relevant information, evidence of his radical left-wing ideology. They just left it out. Because, you know, this will help promote peace. And it also helps to promote the narrative that the only violence to be concerned about in the United States of America, the only politically motivated violence, that would be from the right wing. That would be the Proud Boys or some other right-wing militia group. How much longer before, as I say, everything just completely unravels? These are worse than seeds. It's like that previous article I went through. I mean, the Civil War started with Obama, and it's raging. It continues. And now there's wars within groups as well. And all this because this is not God's world. This is Satan's world. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4. Miranda Devine, it says, on August 5th, 2020, Crooks wrote, in my opinion, the only way to fight the government is with terrorism-style attacks. Sneak a bomb into an essential building and set it off before anyone sees you. Track down any important people, politicians, military leaders, etc., and try to assassinate them. And that's what he did. And he told everyone in 2020, and he carried it out 4 years later. Like alleged Charlie Kirk assassin Tyler Robinson, Crooks appears to have been interested in furries. Oh, there we go. Furries and exploring gender identity. He described himself with the pronouns they, them on the platform DeviantArt, which is one of the biggest online hubs for furry art and the furry community. is the devil's influence something that we want to open our minds up to? Are we really at a point where we're just open to anything? You can't tell someone who he should interview or not interview. Let the people have to decide. Well, Crooks made some decisions. He decided things. So did the Charlie Kirk assassin. He decided he was in the furry community. And same with Crooks, evidently. You've got the transgender evil. You've got the furry evil, whatever that is. You've got assassinations. You've got politically motivated violence. But, I mean, they've got to decide. Well, they are. And more of the decisions are turning more and more violent and evil by the day. And then you look at the rhetoric like you saw in the cold open. You think of what Jesus said on the Olivet Prophecy. Wars and rumors of war. I mean, people just talking about it. Talking about fighting. Talking about taking up arms. Committing assassinations. If you look at Proverbs 6, just coming back to the testimony of Abate and Chris Ray and just how despicable it is. And then to conclude the report, last year, 11 months ago, and it's so dishonest, it's so blatantly deceptive, the spirit of blot out the truth, it's everywhere. Notice what God says he really hates in Proverbs 6. These six things does the Lord hate. Yea, seven are an abomination. A proud look, verse 17, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked imaginations. I mean, think about that in relation to what it says in Genesis 6 about the time before the flood, where man's heart was just on wickedness and evil continually. It says here, God hates that. A heart that devises wicked imaginations. I mean, even wicked thinking is something God hates. He wants us to seek after another mind. We need another mind to make peace with one another. We need another mind to live in safety, in prosperity, to live in good health, whether spiritual or physical. We need the mind of Christ. It says God hates feet that be swift in running to mischief. He hates a false witness that speaks lies, and he that sows discord among brethren. God hates the spirit of division. God hates it when people sow discord. God hates it when they talk about hating one another and fighting against one another. That spirit of deceit, that lying wonder, as it's called in 2 Thessalonians 2. I mean, we witnessed it in the church of God. As I was saying in class this morning, how do you go from supporting the work of the prophesied end time Elijah to just in the space of maybe what, 12, 18 months, to throwing your full support behind an individual the Bible labels as the man of sin? How does that happen? I mean, that is fundamental transformation. That is opening your mind up to the devil's influence. And look at how quickly he can change your thinking. Look at how quickly. I saw this clip from Tucker. I think it was back in the mid-90s where he was just talking about this hatred for Jews and how do you explain it? And he was exposing it in others. And now he's the others. He's one of them. He's joined them. That's a fundamental transformation. That's not that we don't grow in our thinking as we dig deeper into God's word, but it sure does show why we need the truth of God. Why, as it says in the latest trumpet, we need to put down the AI technology and start reading and studying the Bible so that we can just have a sound mind. That's what the Spirit of God is. It says in 2 Timothy 1, it's the spirit of a sound mind. mind. We need another mind to think straight, to think the right way, to have the right worldview, to understand, you know, when we should confront evil and when we should shun it. People are losing that ability. It's every man for himself. It's all gray. Everything's gray. And from the president on down, it's, hey, everybody's got to decide. So who's to say whether he should talk to so-and-so or not? I mean, let him talk to him. Let the people decide. Well, the people are deciding. And more of them are fundamentally transforming into the Jew hatred camp. Is that healthy? Is that going to lead to utopia? Is that going to strengthen the bond between nations? Is that going to add to Israel's safety and security? Well, I guess a lot of people think that it will. John 8, verse 39, it says, "And if you were Abraham's children, you would do the works of Abraham." Jesus was addressing the Pharisees of his day, and I mean, they were so proud of themselves. They thought, hey, we're followers of Moses. We're descendants of Moses and Abraham too. I mean, we come from a righteous background. Look at us. Look at our great patriarchs. Jesus said, if you were the children of Abraham, you'd live the way Abraham did. You'd fear God. You'd obey his commandments. Instead, verse 44 says, you are of your father, the devil, and the lusts of your father you will do. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks of his own, for he's a liar and the father of it. You're children of the devil. Now, they didn't like that message. That's why they tried to kill Christ. That's why they wanted to assassinate Jesus. They didn't like the truth. They didn't like being exposed. They didn't like being told that you have a wicked, evil heart, and it's on evil continually. And the only way out is repentance toward God and the receipt of another mind, the mind of Christ. Matthew 11 and verse 25 says God, he hides it from the high and mighty, the wise of this world, and he reveals his truth to those with a childlike attitude, an obedient childlike attitude. That's what we need to begin to make some headway on solving our problems. Verse 31, just backing up, says, then said Jesus to the Jews, those Jews which believed on him, if you continue in my word, then are you my disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. The truth will lead us out of captivity, out of all these curses. It'll set us free from bondage. If we know it, if we dig into it, and we believe in faith, and we follow that example that Jesus set for us. Well, that's all the time that we have on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's program, and we'll see you again tomorrow.